If you turn to Galatians 5:22, you're ahead of it. Because as a preacher, it's going to take me a minute to get there. I got to get my glasses on. Oh, now I can see. I would like to start by, I got the clock right there, so I know where I'm at. I'd like to spend about 15 minutes just recounting 44 years ago and having some fun memories, because I've been a long journey, not long enough yet, but it's just so awesome. And this has nothing to do with the lesson, but literally my introduction to the Lord's church was when I was 16 and she was 15, 14, and Ron was way younger too. And I got to know Brother Wayne Carson a little later on than that. And some of us have shared that journey that long. And I just think that's awesome. Joe goes all the way back to like 78, 77, somewhere in there, which, you know, is just fantastic. And I think that's what one of the neat things of brotherhood. And so, man, we could stand here and tell stories. My son-in-law's named Mickey. And so when I look at Mick, I'm sorry, Mick, I think Mickey. We spent more hours out on Sugarloaf Lake fishing and listening to his dad tell stories than we can even remember. Which was great training, let me tell you. Of course, y'all know Bud, and I'll quit. I'd love to do that for another half hour or so, but kind of missed the lesson then. I'm going to start with a really, really, really obvious point. And I don't mean to just kind of speak down to you anything, but I'm going to guess that most of us would agree that conversion, specifically baptism, is the beginning of the journey, not the end. Now, I know we're back kindergarten level there, but you know, sometimes folks get it backwards. Sometimes we get that backwards. We get so eager to get someone in the baptistry, you know, and after we get them out of the water, we're just hooping and hollering and hugging and carrying on, and we forget. We just got them started. And there's a whole lot of journey, ahead of that, depending on what their age is. And so we've got this really tough journey. Matthew 7, I'm not going to read it, you know it. 13 and 14, we got two ways. One's broad, what's the other one? And it's really easy, right? No, it's a tough one. Now I want to look at that just a second. And that's going to eventually segue into our Galatians 5:22. But I want to take you to Romans 12:1. And I want to talk a second about why it's so tough. And it's not tough because you had to quit cussing. Now, I'm not going to ask for a shit. Well, I will, but be careful, behave. How many of you gave up cussing from when you were 16 to the time now? You know, and you don't say, you hadn't said those words in so long, you'd have to think to remember how to say them. But that, I know that was a little tough, and maybe you did the quarter in a jar thing to make you quit, but that wasn't really super tough. How many of you gave up robbing banks? No? Y'all need to quit that. Now, literally where I volunteer, I got some inmates, friends, students, they gave up robbing banks. The state helped them, incidentally. Then you have things like you quit smoking. You know, a lot of us gave that one up. You know, 16, it had to be Marlboro because that was the cool way to go back then. But anyway, gave that up. Some other activities that we don't need to detail at this point. Y'all are smart enough to get an overview of the immorality that most people delve into in their young, stupid years. And you give all that up and you get it behind you, and it's really kind of a relief. I think Christianity is tough for different reasons. And I'm looking at Romans 12:1, and he says, present your body a living sacrifice. And he says, don't be conformed to this world, but be renewed in your mind. And you start living on a different level, and you start thinking a whole different way. And it's no longer us. If we could go to Galatians 2:20 in your mind, or you can turn there, Paul says it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. What I'm going to tell you is the tough part of the straight and narrow road is not I had to quit cussing, or I had to quit smoking, or I had to quit this or that. Those had some challenge. I get that. But the really tough part is Clarence no longer gets to be Clarence. Clarence no longer gets to be king of my life. I crown me now. mine will the glory be. But rather, Clarence now becomes Christ. And Christ lives in me. Just like Paul said, that's Galatians 2:20, maybe also 5 and 24, something very similar there. And it's no longer about my plans, my wants, my goals, my. It's how will this bring glory and honor to God. And everything that I would like to do, I'm going to say instinctively, it's not on the table anymore. It's gone. And brethren, that's tough stuff right there. Now, we get to the little practical applications of the fruit of the Spirit. I think you'll see why it is really tough, but it's rough. So we got a whole lot of folks that just look at Christianity and go, I ain't messing with that. And I'm like, then you probably ought not to. You know, well, you're going to end up in hell, but you a lot of folks just don't have what it takes. Then we've got a category of folks, and I'm going to use Revelation 3:15-17. You know the passage, lukewarm, spew you out. Verse 17 is the one we miss. Verse 17, he says, you think you got it. I'm paraphrasing. He says, you think you got it all together. You think you're rich. You think you're well-dressed. You think you got it going on. Let me tell you, you're naked, you're sick, you're blind. You don't know how sick you are. Now, this is a challenge. Now, this gets to be a challenge. When I talk about smoking and alcohol and carousing, we're thinking, you know, somewhere down in a bar somewhere. When we start talking about lukewarm, we're talking about people like you and I in an auditorium just like this all over America this morning that are assembling to do just exactly what we're doing. Because just because we don't smoke and don't drink and don't cuss and don't chase women that aren't our wives, or lady, chase men that aren't your husbands, just because we don't do those things don't mean we're Christian, does it? I know a lot of people that don't smoke. They're not Christian. I know people that don't lie. They're not Christian. You get my idea? And so we come here to this level, and you got good people who has some basic good morals, and yet John, Christ talking through John, would say to them, but you're naked. You need some help. You're lukewarm. I'm going to spew you out. I like the old King James, I believe it was, it said vomit you out. Because I like that. You know, it's a 12-year-old in me. It's a little more of a regurgitating idea. You know, I do mean to get a little bit gross. I won't go into detail for me personally, but I want you to think of the last time, I'll be polite, you regurgitated. How enjoyable was it? My son threw up once when he was, what, 7 or 8? And he goes, wow, that was cool. Most of us don't go there. The reason I want you to think of the grossness and the nastiness of that is because when God says, I will spew you out, he's not just going, dude, that was nasty. When God says, I will spew you out, he's saying the lukewarm make me want to puke. The lukewarm make me want to hurl. They make me want to have that nauseous, horrible, ugly experience that you had the last time you got the flu or the bad food down at the fast food place with a teenager behind the counter that don't wash his hands. You know the idea. And I think sometimes we miss that. So we have folks that look at Christianity and go, I don't want any of that. It's tough. And it is tough. And then we have folks that want it because Christianity's, I'm going to get in trouble with some people here. I got admonished for this one time. I said, Christianity's fun. I was told later on, it's not fun. It's not supposed to be fun. I said, well, it's a delight and a joy then. So Christianity's fun. I don't know how people do life without Christianity. So I've got 44 years with characters like Joe and good men like Ron and lifelong friends like Mick. Didn't say Mickey that time. And Sharon and I almost have 45 years together, if you'll allow me to count our dating time. She was 13 and I was 15. And then, of course, there's all the association, all the people that we knew at Southside over the years. We go back to Park Hill, you know, and the folks that we knew there over the years, and then Sharon and I down at Midland over the years, and Indiana, and where I've been now for 20 years. How do people live life without Christianity? I don't get it. Blows my mind. But it is tough. But a lot of folks want in that social circle. So they want to get in the social circle, and I'm glad to have them in there. You know, we'll let anybody sit on the pew. Don't hardly turn anybody out the door ever. And so they get in the social circle, and they sit down. And they get lukewarm. They don't cuss. They don't drink. They don't smoke. They don't chase people they ought not to chase. They're really good citizens. They're good workers. You know, they pay their taxes. Everything about them is good, except they're lukewarm. Because Christianity's tough. It's the toughest thing you will ever, ever do. And then we have even a smaller segment. I want to pick on this one just a tad. And if I remember, I'll weave it back in. Is we have the academic lukewarm segment. And I'm slicing it a little narrow there. But some of us like to study. Bible study's fun. And to me, it's a lot like working a crossword puzzle. And I'm not a crossword puzzle person, but trying to figure out the puzzle and trying to figure out the arguments and laying that out on the table and learning it. The academic aspect is really, really good. But that's not all of it either, is it? Now, I bring this up specifically to warn us. And I'm talking about us, this auditorium, and I do this with my folks back in Pine Bluff, and I warn us there. If all we do is this, if all we do is we get together in the auditorium and we have a great academic discussion, and I mean, we nail it. I don't care if we're talking about baptism or other issues or whatever you want to talk to. I mean, we've got it, book, chapter, and verse. We are solid, and God Himself would go, yeah, y'all got that one right. But then we don't take the living of Christianity out of the auditorium Monday through Saturday and live the fruits of the Spirit or live the living sacrifice of Romans 12:1. If all we have is academic accuracy, then we're still the lukewarm of Revelation chapter 3, verse 15 through 17. And I think that's what makes it so horribly tough. God is not just looking at us to know. Now, you got to be careful there because you got to know, right? 2 Timothy 2:15, if you're old King James, what does it say? Study. Now, I disagree with the first part there. I like the New King James. It says, be diligent to show yourself approved. A workman need not be ashamed before God. Rightly dividing the word of truth. And I think that's where the academics come in. Rightly dividing the word. You got to know the book. So when I kind of dog the academics, I am not saying, no, you don't have to know. Yes, you do have to know. But if all you do is know, then that's not practicing Christianity. The practice of Christianity is in the daily walk of life. And the knowledge, like what we do in here and you do in your Bible classes all over the place, absolutely essential, absolutely wonderful, but the aim of education is not knowledge. Do you know the old saying? The aim of education is not knowledge, but what? Action. Action. You got to take it off the pew and you got to live it. And it's got to be in the daily life. And that's what makes it so horribly tough. Is because as long as we're theoretical, and we could dice this one other way. Let me see where I am to be sure I don't. It's so easy to ramble after so many years. I started preaching when I was 25, and so do the math off of 60, what's that, 35 years, and now it's harder to stay short than it was used to be to get along. So another way we could dice that is do you have a pet peeve maybe it's the liberal progressive issues versus the conservative issues. Maybe it's homosexuality. Maybe it's something like the Catholic Church, and you really just like to beat up on the Catholic Church or something. Or, you know, maybe you like the baptism. You know, and I'm not saying those subjects are all wrong or anything. I'm just saying it's easy to get so hung up on, let's say, baptism. And I'm going to prove that baptism is the point of conversion. Ananias, Saul of Tarsus, why tarriest thou? Rise, be baptized, wash away your sins. And I'm going to really, really prove it. And I'm going to nail it down and I'm going to get it. And it is possible to get so intent and hung up right there that while you have baptism absolutely correct in every aspect, there's this whole set of producing the fruit of the Spirit in your life that's not going. You notice that when you read the fruit of the Spirit, he never says anything about baptism. Now, I think we'll all agree baptism precedes it. I mean, you're not going to grow the fruit of the Spirit without baptism. But he never says, and the fruit of the Spirit is to teach the Baptist about baptism. It's not there. Now, look, I want to be so careful because sometimes I'm misunderstood and people walk out and go, "Were you saying?" And I'm like, "Where did you get that?" Harold Turner told me once that he preached a sermon and it was as crystal clear as could be. And by the time it got back around to him, it had flipped all the way over. And he had preached against what he had preached for. So you got to be so careful. I'm not saying baptism and knowing baptism and studying baptism inside out is wrong. I'm saying in studying baptism and excluding the fruits of the Spirit and the other aspects of Christianity, and you could put the Beatitudes in there or whatever you want. I'm saying, thinking, man, I'm such a good Christian because I can handle any Baptist or any Methodist on the subject of baptism. I'll send them all running away with their tail tucked between their legs. I got this. And you go home and treat your wife like a jerk. And you're not practicing Christianity. And I'm saying that's what makes it tough. As we get our pet areas and we like to hang out in them, and then we miss the other. Let me skip some of this. I had no idea what kind of time I'd need. Our first fruit of the Spirit is love. Love is cornerstone, isn't it? 1 Corinthians 13:1-3, Paul says, love's kind of mediocre. If y'all get it, it'll be fine. He says, but without love, you're absolutely nothing. So you got to get love nailed down. Love is going to be your white belt entry level, and you're still going to be working on it when you reach black belt. Now, I like that analogy. I started using it about 3 years ago. New convert's a white belt, and we're trying to become a black belt. And there's a progression there. And I don't get too technical with it because it's never going to fit perfectly, but that's the way analogies work. And so we take this love, and it's got to weave through every single moment, every single breath. And so I have like Matthew 22:39, who tells me to love my neighbor with some toleration. It says love my neighbor as myself, right? And I'm going to get a little more specific with you. My number one neighbor's sitting right here. See, because I think this is part of the challenge, is that, well, that's my wife. She don't count. No, that's my wife. She's the number one that counts the most. I got to live with her. And I'll say it in jest, but this actually happens. I got to sleep. And I do actually know two cases. One woman took a bed slat and taught her husband a lesson after he went to sleep. And I know the other case secondhand, and he came home in an unacceptable situation, condition. And he woke up in the middle of the night, and she was sitting on his chest with a butcher knife. And she explained to him how he would never, ever come home and behave that way again. And he never did till the day they died. They stayed together to the end of their time, and that's a wonderful story. But my point is, this is number one. She cooks my food. Arsenic, right? You get the idea? You better be treating your number one, whoever that is, with total love, just like you love yourself. But sometimes in marriage, we lose that. You know, I couldn't wait to marry her. This is going to be the greatest thing in the world. And you know, then the honeymoon's over and the kids set in and life takes over. And sometimes the husband and wife drift apart, right? And it's not uncommon for a husband and wife to have spent all the years raising the kids together. The kids go off to college, and one of them looks across the table. The other one goes, "Who are you? I know you've been living here, but I don't know you anymore." And the only things that was holding together was the kids. Now, let me ask you, is that Christianity? I want you to think Ephesians 5, and think 5:22-33. So we've got a big chunk of verse there. What is a husband supposed to do to his wife? Nurture, cherish her, just like he does his own body. Love her as Christ loved the church. Now, if any of you men are sitting there going, "Yeah, but what about verse 22? Not your verse. You don't get that one. That's the lady's verse. And this, you got to be careful there, because this is what we do. Us men go straight to verse 22. Wives, obey or submit to your husbands as unto the Lord. That's it right there. That's the one my wife needs to read. Yes, it is. It's not the one I need to read. The one I need to read, because I'm the man, is husbands, love your wife like Christ loved the church. Now, to go back to Romans 12:1, present your body a living sacrifice. Oh, I would die for the Lord. treat her right? Are you kidding? If you not, if the Lord was married to my wife, he would not have wrote that verse, let me tell you. That's we start rationalizing and playing games. No, that's where Christianity's practiced. And that's why it is straight and narrow. Is because sometimes we do this little weird thing about, oh yeah, I love my neighbors myself. But those people right there in our inner circle, we don't love. We tolerate, we aggravate, we insult, we kick around, we hurt their feelings, and then we somehow play a game like, yeah, but that's different, preacher. That's just not the same. No, that's where it's at. That's where it's at. That's where you really live life. That's where, as the old timers would say, the rubber meets the pavement. That's really where it's happening. And if you can't take all these things of love and learn to be holy as God is holy within the relationship you committed. You stood before the preacher, the judge, and most of you said the same thing. Sickness and health, better or worse, richer or poorer, till death do we part. I'm with you all the way through this one. If I can't really work on my black belt here, then why should I give myself big kudos for having a great relationship with Joe or Ron? Now, I don't want this to sound bad, but Joe and Ron are easy to have a great relationship with. Now, let me ask you just to estimate really quick, either one of you off the top of your head, in the last year, how many minutes have we spent together? Counting last night, even. Right, so maybe we're up to 120. I can have a great relationship with anybody I only spend 120 minutes a year with. There's no challenge there. And I don't mean anything bad about these guys because these are great guys. I think we could do a few more minutes, maybe. I'm thinking here. But I hang out with people at Varner that are really, really bad people. I hang out with some people at Varner that are just stupid, and they need my patience too. But I'm with them a very short time. And it's real easy to be nice for a very short time. Her and I, 45 years, probably an average of, you got work and you try to figure all that in, but let's just say 8 hours a day. You think we ever got on each other's nerves? The answer here is no. And this is where it's practiced. And this is where all that love really comes in. Now, it's not just my wife or your mate. It'll be like my dad. My dad, which some of you know is 85, and Sharon and I giggle. He's starting to walk like an 85-year-old. He's got that odd totter. And I was telling Sharon just yesterday, I've got to learn to slow down and let Dad get his thought together before I talk. I'll look at Dad and go, boy, it's a beautiful day today, isn't it? And it's like 45 seconds later, he's going, yeah, it's a pretty good day. Well, I've done three other places in my mind, you know. And I have heard people do this with their parents, and I refuse to do it. They act in a very unloving way. You know, young people my age dealing with 85-year-olds can get snappy, can get really hateful sometime. And then, bless their hearts, you get the ones who are mama's got Alzheimer's. All I know to do is to sympathize with that. I have no special magic for you. But mama says, what time is it? And you go, mama, it's 9 o'clock. And at 9:02, mama goes, what time is it? Mama, it's just 9 o'clock. And 9:04, mama says, what time is it? I just told you. And mama's not there anymore. Love. Love, it goes everywhere. You know? And this is where it gets tough. This is where it really gets hard. Not I love to mess with the clerks at McDonald's and Walmart. That's one of my hobbies. My hobby, if you're behind the counter, I'm going to make you smile. I almost never fail. I'll come up with something. It'd be bizarre, but I'll make you smile. And so I like to mess. But again, what's that? 3 minutes? So, oh man, time's running away. I knew I wouldn't get through them. Joy. Let's run to joy real quick. I wanted to skip ahead to not spend too much time on joy. Joy is just learning to I'm going to be redundant here. Develop the fruit of joy. We're pilgrims here. We have this awesome, man, people say to me, number one, Varner is the safest place you'll ever be. I'm not kidding you. You're in more danger at Walmart than I am at Varner. But people look at me and go, wow, you go there? Because it's a really bad place. And they put me in a room with 50 inmates and they lock the door behind me. And they go, there's not an officer? And I go, no. Officer's behind the glass, kind of like your guy back there. And their job is to do this if there's a riot. Write down, volunteer fell, killed at 9:58. That's their job, is just to record it. You know, and I'm like, okay, I'm good with that. In all the years of volunteering nationwide, I know of one story where a volunteer in the religious services has been murdered. One. Now, let's talk McDonald's and other places, you know. So it's not a bad place, but people say to me, aren't you afraid? I go, no. If they kill me, I'm going home. That's the end of my deployment. If I were in Afghanistan and Joe were my superior, and Joe would be my superior if I were in Afghanistan, right? He's my senior. And he walked up and said, Phil, got your papers, you're going home. Not in my greenest day would I look at Joe and go, no, I want to stay. I've only been here 5 years. I want another 20. The doctor hands you your papers and says you're going home. It's pancreatic cancer, which we had a friend died of pancreatic cancer. He got the message one day. 4 months later, he was dead. 70 years old. Awesome attitude. Because he believed he was going home. There's your joy. Now, you know, what's that got to do with the fruit of the spirits and this tough journey and all that stuff? If you're looking at life and you're fretting and you're stressed out about it, and you're so afraid you're going to lose something in life, then you hadn't got it figured out yet. Now, I'm not saying you're not Christian, but you're still at a white belt level here, maybe a yellow belt. Because somewhere along the way you go, this world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are. It ain't just a song I sing. They are laid up beyond the blue. I am a pilgrim, as Peter said. This world is just, it is vapor. I brought nothing in. I'm taking nothing out. And when I really get to the heart of Christianity, that's an experiential reality, if I can say it that way. It's not just a theory. It's a, you know, I don't want to die. I'm not in a hurry to go. But then again, hey, why not be in a hurry to go? I say it this way, I'm from Arkansas, and I want to put my bare feet on the golden street. And I'm looking forward to that someday. I'm going to skip over peace. I'm down to 5 minutes if I'm watching my clock right. I'm going to jump to long-suffering. Your translations are going to vary on this, and there's a whole lot we could say about the translation. Some will say patience and what have you. All the research I did as we're doing this study in very slow, painful detail down at Pine Bluff, is it's long-suffering is self-restraint in the face of provocation. Now, that's what we boiled it down to. Now, you could go a couple other directions if you want to mess with the Greek, but that's where we went. So we're looking at some long-suffering in the face of uncomfortable circumstances. One of my favorite go-to verses is Proverbs 19 and 11. Now, I'm not going to turn there. I'm going to quote the part I want, but you go there and look at it to be sure I'm right. Proverbs 19 and 11 says it's to a man's glory to overlook a transgression. What I'm telling you is everything does not have to be addressed. Every time my wife, because I think, again, I think this is the core of Christianity for us married people, every time my wife does something that's not to suit me, I don't have to address it. Woman, you're supposed to submit to me like the church does to the Lord. And I wanted my cream potatoes without gravy. And look, come on. That's ridiculous. That's not Christianity. In fact, when he says it's to a man's glory to overlook a transgression, I would say that ties quite well into long-suffering. And there are a lot of times when you ought to just look at that and go, you know, that battle's not worth picking. Now, if you listen to motivational speakers like Anthony Robbins, which I do not highly recommend because he got all potty mouth on us, but there's a great wisdom out there, and they all tell you, pick your battles. You don't have to fight every battle. Pick them. I think Proverbs 19:11, and I think the fruit of the Spirit of long-suffering is telling us to pick our battles. You know, there's some days when I wake up and I'm just cranky. I slept on one side too long, and Arthur's catching up with me, and he likes to remind me that he's there. And I get out of bed, and I'm not cheery. Can you imagine that? There are days when I can tell by the way she walks through the living room, I just need to spend a little more time at the office. I'm not saying anything to her. I'm not making an issue of it. I just know that she, like I have my good days, I have my on top of the world days, and I have this is a really, really ugly, no good, horrible, really bad Alexander bad day. I know that too. And we all do it. And at some point, you look across the table and go, yeah, she calls it her me time. She says, I just need my me time. I call it my man cave time, you know, and my man cave is my office. And I hide out there a lot. And it's just really neat. And this is part of the long suffering. Same thing going to be with my kids. My daughter's raising three kids. One's 19, which means 13, and one's 11, and then another one is 7. And she's got a job and she's got a husband. And there are going to be days when she's not going to be in the best of spirits. Sometimes she walks through the church door and I think, boy, she's had a rough one. I don't say it. I just, you know, I see it and I'm polite and I stay back and give her space. This is what you do. This is part of long suffering. Now, you get other times also when it gets a little more intense. I had a kidney stone a week ago. Those are a lot of fun. And now I've learned not to complain because other people have so many worse things, and a kidney stone is there. It makes you scream a while, and then it goes away. Well, I've got friends younger than me that are looking at colostomies. And this guy I'm thinking about is 41. I'm like, yeah, I'll take the kidney stone anytime. But now, so Robert's his name. I'm thinking, boy, I bet he and his wife get a little testy. And I wouldn't fault that for a moment. How are you going to behave with them now? Well, you ain't talking to me in that tone of voice. I'm 20 years older than you. You better know who you're. I'm the preacher. Are you going to understand what they're going through and going, yeah, I'd be upset too. Long-suffering. Self-restraint in the face of an unpleasant situation. Now, I'm not saying you can't ever respond. You get this. It's case-by-case basis, you know. I mean, the kid comes through and your kid's 16, your kid's in just one of those hormonal attitudes. Yeah, some of those you need to let walk. Sometimes your kid comes through and the attitude's not what it ought to be. Sometimes you need to set them down and go, whoa, wait a minute, buddy. You got free room and board here. And if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have that car you were just complaining about. And we're going to have a talk here. And so sometimes you got to have some admonishing and rebuking, you know. But I can't give you a list that says this is when to and this is when not to. It's a judgment call. And it's your call. You get to pick it. I would say be careful. But I'm not going to try to pick it for you. I got 1 minute. How about kindness? Let's do kindness real quick. Kindness that we're going to do is that just everything. You know, the Jeff Foxworthy joke, sensuous up, get me a Coke while you're in the kitchen. Those little kindnesses. This is the daily walk of life. This is the wife says, hey, while you're in the kitchen, would you get me a... Sure, be glad to. Instead of... If you noticed you've put on 40 pounds, you need to get off of that couch and get your own. I wouldn't dare go there. I know men that have gone there. They're still alive, and that part amazes me. The courtesies of helping your wife bring in the groceries, maybe, or carrying out the trash. I don't know how your house is set up. Everybody does it different. The courtesy of putting your dishes in the dishwasher. And as absurd as that sounds, I literally know a lady who put a sign on the dishwasher that said it does not take a college degree to load the dishwasher. And the funny thing is the dishwasher and the sink were, you know, like 3 feet apart. And so what I'm talking about is that it's tough. Christianity's tough, but it's not the Baptists that are going to keep us out of heaven. And it's not the people down at Big Bad Bob's Bar or wherever that's going to keep us out of heaven. It's going to be the little things where we didn't do the fruit of the Spirit right here in the circle of life where we live every day. That's what's going to keep us out of heaven if we're not careful. But that's what makes it tough. I've had more than two bells, so I'll quit. Thank you.